Blog Talk Radio.
Of Shadows. This is your host, Robert M., accompanied by the always awesome Miss Pam Ray. How are you doing tonight, Pam?
I am doing great. I am so happy to have my power back on and have internet at my house. Oh my goodness. I am not made for roughing it, that's for sure. And I wasn't even roughing it that much, but it felt like it.
Oh, I hear you. Like anytime the power goes out here in the desert, it feels like you're just going back into the Stone Age. You know, they're like, well, what am I supposed to do? Yeah.
It's, anything
we've become very reliant on these things. So it's kind of scary, actually, but I can
understand. It is. Well, and to be honest, my psychological health really depends on it, because most of my social life is online. So, you know, on all poetry and such and the shows But so how are you doing?
I've been here and there, you know, back and forth, so to speak. I've been dealing with my own mental endeavors, but you know, it is what it is. Everybody has their thing, and I managed to get a few Z's before the show so that I can actually be awake and somewhat coherent for you guys. So here we
go. Oh, good. Good. All right. So only not as the potatoes aren't going to be as mashed as they could have been.
No,
had you not
there might
mashed.
Be a few, there might be a few lumps in there. Probably even some garlic or some pepper. I don't know.
Yeah, there you go. Well, yes. Great topic tonight.
Yeah, I really like The Nightmare Before Christmas, and I think that it's very fitting, you know, given my aesthetic and the darkness before Christmas. And not everybody has a great time at Christmas time, I'm one of those people. So this kind of, I really enjoy Tim Burton's work, and this is one that's really stuck with me over the years, you know, growing up and watching it and just really taking it in, like feeling as though someone understands me and that Christmas is, it's good in a lot of ways, but there's also that other side, you know, and people have made their own rationales over the years as to what it means. And I'm fine with that, but I also think that it could be a day or a time period, so to speak, to really enjoy the other parts of it. So this is one of those times. The Nightmare Before Christmas is a great example of that. So without further ado, I guess we can – do we have anybody on, or is it just you and I?
Just you and I so far.
Okie doke. All right, well, let's get into it. We can start with our first piece. Where are we going, Miss Pam?
All right, well, up first we have The Boogie Oogie Man by Dammit Dave. And go ahead, Robert, and give that a read for us, please.
I'd be happy to. Oogie Boogie is my favorite, so. Well, 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 what have we here? Christmas party, huh? Oh, I'm really pumped. So this one is the one everybody's talking about. Ha ha! It's smoking. It's smoking. I can't believe my eyes. This Christmas fest will be the best. I'm here with all the guys. The DJ is jumping. My feet are gonna burst. I might just split my pants now if I don't die dancing first. When Mr. Oogie Boogie says the party's close at hand, you better pay attention now, because I'm the boogeyman. And if you aren't dancing, then there's something very wrong, because this may be the last time now before Santa comes along. Ooh, 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 I'm your boogeyman. Oh, boogeyman. My feet are real antsy, are feeling antsy, and there's dancing here to do. I might just find the nerve to ask if I can dance with you. And don't you know that one thing that would make this party nice? Some eggnog and a keg of beer to add a little spice. Ooh, oh yeah. Ooh, oh, oh, oh yeah. I'm the boogie oogie man in poem. That was nice. I like that. You did a great job, Dave, and I really appreciate that that write, because it really set the tone and set the mood and encapsulated the whole awesomeness of Oogie Boogie, you know, with your parody song. So yeah, that was very enjoyable. I also like the fact that it kept the rhythm. Like the other song, you know, even though I messed up a couple of times, but that was my doing. Him being able to kind of like stay in character, so to speak, and then just have this really, really fun write. And yet, like, you know, you can picture the deviousness of Oogie himself in the song. So I thought Dam and Dave did a great job. What did you think, Pam?
Yes, I have to agree. This is like definitely a bowl full of awesome sauce. You know, he keeps the rhythm. He has the whole jazzy, bluesy type feel to that comes with the song. It's fun. It definitely makes you smile. I really like how you read it, especially the way you did the laugh. I thought that was spot on. You know, he just, as you said, he captures the character so nicely. I really like when Mr. Boogie Oogie says, "A party's close at hand. You better pay attention now because I'm the boogeyman." You know, just wonderful lines all the way through and definitely very well done. I like the way he's captured this character, for sure.
Me too, and especially it being one of my favorite characters. I hold it in high esteem, so great job there, Dave. All right, Pam, where are we off to next?
And that is a particularly fun song. The other fun song, in my opinion, because I was listening through them, is the one, Kidnap the Sandy Claws.
Yeah.
That one's
good one, too.
Yeah. And
those little kids in that movie, man.
Oh, my gosh, they're hysterical. Yeah. Yep. I had to do a little refresher, and I didn't watch the movie, but I watched like little tidbits here and there on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
and then watched the music parts, and
yeah,
those little kids were hysterical, so very cool. All right, and up next we have "Dreams of Christmas" by Betty Page. "My dreams of Christmas, picture perfect in my mind, a fantasy land. Shimmering visions, sweet daydreams of family gathered all around, singing Christmas songs in some beautiful embrace, reminiscing love. Playing retro games, opening gifts beneath our tree, sipping on champagne, dining on potluck, displayed like Martha Stewart. We'll talk of good times, spin round some bar stools next to Grandpa's cigar room where he smokes his pipe, watch some rock and roll while adults enjoy cocktails. We'll drink Christmas punch, holiday cookies, candy canes, sweet gingerbread, Norwegian favorites. I'm reminiscing ghosts of Christmas as I walk down streets. I'm not invited outside in Christmas present. Fun times have faded, doubts that they'll come back. Most now are up in heaven, the rest have scattered. I'm beyond alone. What will my future be like for love so splintered? Stained glass pierced my heart. Church bells rang when each one passed, divided us all. Strolling by homes now, haunted, empty, jaded heart, gazes through windows. Shattering cascades, sinking feelings just linger. Silence consumes me. I'm sitting outside at a park where I once played, watch as houses fill. Strange feelings tonight. I see all these embraces as all shut their doors. Their laughter, discord, melodies to them, I'm sure, as they drink and dine, dance and be merry. See joy I once felt when loved, feel them open gifts. I'm a mere gypsy, a nomad now, forever dreaming of Christmas." End poem.
Nicely read, Pam. Yeah, that's this. I really like this piece because it shows the not just the juxtaposition, but the path that led there. It kind of started off like, you know, this is how things were. Everything was so cheery at one time or another, and it slowly drifts into the true cold that happens not just in the winter season, but throughout, you know, the isolation and throughout people missing people and all the sadness and things that it entails once they're gone. Like, you have all of that joy when you're surrounded by people that you care about and you're able to share these things with them. And then when everyone is gone, the void is that much more, like, everything is that much more empty, you know. It kind of reminds me of, like, how I'm quoting Shawshank Redemption again, you know, where Morgan Freeman said, you know, some birds are just, you know, too bright to be caged, and this drab old cage is that much more miserable that they're gone, you know. He's done something like that. So all that beauty and all that warmth and all that goodness that you are able to celebrate is now the opposite. There's nothing. Like, if you're just cold and bitter and even envious of people who get to still enjoy those things. So I thought she did a phenomenal job in depicting that. And it's a cold truth nowadays for many people. And that's how it ends up, you know, a lot of the times. This is really a thought-provoking piece and also heart-wrenching. And I really enjoyed this one, Betty. It's a real eye-opener for many and a relatable piece. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I have to agree. You know, I think this is definitely a prime example of what you were talking about at the beginning of the show, how holidays, you know, Christmas time isn't happy for everyone. There are those who go through sadness, either because they deal with seasonal depression or because their life has had changes through it that have made the holidays less enjoyable. This is just brilliant imagery and metaphors, and I really like how she takes us on this journey. And as you were mentioning, she starts first with what Christmas used to be, you know, that idea of family hanging out together, the exchange of gifts, the exchange of love, and then it all falls apart. I did find this very relatable, and I think there are many who could find this relatable. I do think now I have gone myself through things that have changed holidays for me. And sometimes it feels like it's for the worse, but other times I have to stop and remind myself, you know, like when I was a kid, I grew up in a pretty, like, not rich, but definitely not a poor family. Like, you know, we got tons of gifts. And you think, and there was always good food, and you think that'd be wonderful, but there was abuse and stuff that went on behind the scenes. And of course, you know, it's amazing what prestige in a small town will cover up. And as I've grown older and my Christmases have gotten smaller and I haven't been able to afford the gifts as much, you know, I've come to have an appreciation, and I this might sound slightly cliche, but really, as I've grown to have smaller holidays, I have a bigger appreciation for who I do have around me and what I do have, you know, you can definitely feel the emotional impact of this. You can feel the loneliness. And I like how you mentioned, Robert, and I have to agree with you. There is that kind of sense of envy, you know, while watching people who have what you once had. You know, just an excellent write all the way through and very well done. I'm definitely hungry for gingerbread cookies now.
And eggnog, right? I mean, I love me some eggnog, so yeah, I get that. Gingerbread cookies are awesome too. So, it's one of those things too, because as time passes on, things get more expensive. You can do even less, and I don't know. Thanks, Betty, for that, because it's like I said, I like eye-opening pieces. This is this type of stuff I really strive for, like to bring out, because you know, not everything is peaches and roses. I mean, you know what I mean. So, thanks for that comment, Pam. It was awesome. Where are we headed to next?
Well, before we move forward, I would like to welcome Felon to the show. Welcome, Felon. Glad you could join us.
Welcome.
Are you on mute, or did I not unmute you? Let me see. Oh,
yes.
All right.
Hear me now?
Hello.
Hello.
Yep.
I can't get it off of mute. I'm sorry.
Good to hear you.
I brought you a little gift too, the little whatever the Jack Skeleton or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Awesome.
But I'm here to awesome. Comment as well.
Oh, okay.
Are you able to stay for a while, or do you need to read and run?
No, I'm going to stay for just a little bit. I can't stay, like, but maybe an hour.
Oh, okay.
An hour? Okay. Okay. Sounds good. Sounds good.
Okay.
All right. Well, then we have up next The Elf They Think is a Goblin by Time Teller. And Felon, will you give that a read for us, please?
Absolutely. I'll be more than honored to do that for Time Teller. It's called The Elf That Think, The Elf Think is a Goblin. Here they goblin. What are they doing here tonight? You're not an elf. You can't make toys or help Santa. And the kids get so much fright. Oh, you say? But you are an elf and not a goblin. On perceived determination as thinking you deceive on what tangled web we think you weave. Hey there, elf, can you make it just a toy the same way we might? Or can you drive Santa's sleigh? Can you stay calm and hide all the anger from the public, so-called friends like the clangers? Can you smile and hate all at the same time? Get the other people to do your dirty? Use your power and influence like a bitch while training another to get anger, not to anger. No, of course you can't, for you're not an elf. You can't do things that we do except what we think, and we may let you assemble, accompany us on our travel, and never, never be truly you. Santa says you have to be what you say you to see. Shit, sorry. Santa says you have to seek to be what you see you as. After all, we know what you're doing. Not one has influenced the reality of plagued you, while themselves are worse than you. This writing is so small. And now it's down to the things that he said, yet we have done far worse. But we are trying to help you, elf, to see you're not what you say you are. You are what you think you used to be. And yet another Christmas passes, and so we'll pile it even on thicker. And as time is ticking, and the snow has become even thicker. Now, we try to make amends only if you accept the blame. If we were trying to help you mend, but allowed our own prudence to mess up the trends. So the tiger has used to bite like a bitch steals from us in the night. His anger has hurt you time and again. Goblin, goblin, come on now, admit it's all you're doing. If you had simply not tried to be an elf, we would have fixed things by now. That's well. But you insist on deceiving us, so we use aversion in the backward kind of way. The more you behave like an elf, the more we get in your way. Merry Christmas, Goblin. Employment. I'm sorry I massacred that.
It's fine. It's hard when the words are small. Thank you for reading that, Felon. This is very interesting. A goblin trying to be an elf, trying to be good. Well, what he perceives as good, but the elves are all just assholes, you know. And they're over there saying things like, "No, of course you can't, for you're not an elf. You can't do the things we do, except what we think, and we may let you assemble, accompany us on our travel, and never, never be truly you." So you can probably join us. Like, it's not even a for sure thing, But you could probably join us if you choose to be fake, you know, if you choose to cast aside your goblin-ish nature, we may have a place for you. And that makes it far more sinister, like when you think about it, because the North Pole and Santa's I almost said Santa's laboratory, but Santa's workshop and all that, it make it seem like as though, you know, it's this happy-go-lucky place. But when you think about it, like, the elves are almost like slaves there, and who knows, like, what type of atrocities actually happened under the surface. So yeah, not everything is that it appears to be. And in this case, the benevolent goblin gets treated like shit by the sadistic elves. So I thought this was a great spin on the classic tale. So yeah, that was great. Thank you for that, time teller. What are your thoughts, Pam?
Well, first of all, I like the idea of Santa being a mad scientist. So that was cool. But, you know, I really like this. It makes me, I was thinking earlier when I was reading this on how it kind of reflects on the theme. And I really like that he was inspired by all the prompts. One of the main themes of The Nightmare Before Christmas being that Jack wants to be Santa Claus, and he ends up finding out that it doesn't work if you're not true to yourself. And here we have a reflection of that in the idea, as you were saying, that these elves are telling this goblin that he could fit in if only he's not true to himself. You know, it's a wonderful presentation, even though it's a mythological type tale, a fantasy type tale. It's a strong reflection of the reality of the prejudice that so many people have, unfortunately. You know, just strong lines. I like how he brings out the mocking tone. Hey there, elf, can you make this toy the same way we might, or can you drive Santa's sleigh? You know, just a really great write, really thoughtful and creative and very well done.
Indeed. Indeed. This is a great piece. What were your thoughts having read it, Felon?
I like this because it has a message in it, a really deep meaning message. And yet at the same time, he's trying to bring that uniqueness and that rawness of the movie itself. You know, the goblins, they're trying to do what's right, and they're trying to help out and lend a hand, but yet these little elves are being like little big assholes to them for no reason. It's like, you know, instead of saying thank you for the help and or whatever, they're mocking them basically. Can you do this? Can you do that? I'd be like this one over to the graveyard or wherever they're at, say, hey, can you do this? Can you do that? Instead of saying, hey, thanks, man. So I think the message in it is the most important thing, and I enjoyed that. I'd like to actually put a spin on that to show, you know, just because you're not what everybody perceives you to be a certain thing doesn't mean you can't do it. Anybody can do anything to put their mind to. So excellent, excellent, right?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, that's a good comment there, Phil. And Pam, thank you for yours as well. So we're off and running. Let's see, what's our next piece?
Remaining Behind, A Live Lament, our protagonist theme by Pee Wee Cousin. And go ahead, Robert, and give that a read for us, please.
I'll try. Now, what have I done? She's all gone. Destiny and fate's hand taken to the grave. Forever I fantasized her to be the one. Fate has come, its fickle hand not stayed. Once again, forevermore, I refuse the sun. Sun outside shines for all of the people who are someone but me. What I had done, I'm not people. Please hang me from a steeple. Practically pariah, don't deny ya. Solitary thought of that place where we'd go by Toledo before disease ate your face. Quicken the past. Please let death come fast. down to me and what I see, my ineptitude. Should have knew, my love, you won't last. Magnitude of mood, permeate rectitude. Nature of man playing God or go-getter. Year one becomes septic and pathetic. Quite perverse disease, you have leopard. Rot your dreams and flesh if neglected. Remembering your disease took her away. The girl you lived, for she long died. So here we've made so far past our days. Say goodbye to the lies, skies you denied. Cannot deal with this life you've made. Nothing left to live for. Now she's gone. Never go another day without her face. She has gone, and this life is done. End poem. It says it's from Sally's song. So yeah, Sally, she's also an interesting character in the movie itself. Like she's locked away in a mad scientist lab and has been victim to all of his experiments. And this seems as though like her and Jack ended up having a tragic ending, obviously, because in the movie itself, like they of course they're already like dead puppets, so to speak, but something more menacing came about, and I think she met her true demise. And this really was a very, very dark and gritty reach into that. Like I like the word you put, nature of man playing God or go-getter. Year one becomes septic and pathetic. Quite perverse disease, you have leopard. Rot your dreams and flesh if neglected. Like in my view, it seems as though like he's speaking of like when people take science to the extreme or try to manipulate a situation that's that they cannot control, and they end up doing far more damage than they could ever hope to mend. And I think that part is really reflective of human nature in that regard. So yeah, I don't know. This is like always, Pee-wee always does great poetry, and I'm always glad that he writes and finds inspirations in the topics that I put up there. So thank you for bringing this to our attention, Pee-wee. And Felon, what did you think?
I mean, I'll be honest, I never watched the movie. Of The Nightmare Before Christmas. I know it's crazy that I never watched it. I don't know much about Sally, but hearing your interpretation of what she is and everything, I think this is a pretty good rendition or just an insight of what she's about or what happened to her. So great poem.
Okay. Yeah, well, not everybody has seen the movie, so I can't hold that against you. It's a good one, though. You may want to check it out. I don't know if it's your forte, but...
No, I think I'm gonna watch it tomorrow. Matter of fact, I'm gonna give it a whirl.
Oh, okay. Well, let us know how that goes. That'd be awesome. Pam, what about you? What did you think?
Yeah, this has wonderful imagery. It's an excellent dark write, and I do like how it brings up the idea of playing God and. How oftentimes that backfires. I'm also drawn to the where it says, once again, forevermore, I refuse the sun. Sun outside shines for all the people who are someone but me, what I done. I'm not people. Please hang me from a steeple. It speaks to me on the minor theme of the movie of how Sally is the only one who sees that the direction that Jack is going in is wrong, and no one will listen to her. I do also really like nature of man playing God or no-getter. Your one becomes septic and pathetic, quite perverse disease. You have leopard, rot your dreams and flesh if neglected. Those are just powerful lines on the idea of the neglecting of dreams and the idea of how, you know, just how when I'm trying to think how to say it. Just the idea of when we don't treat people like people, like, you know, we don't offer up that love to our fellow humanity. You know, there's this inner disease of the soul. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, when humanity rots away, gets eaten like by a disease. Yeah, that's a good take. Thanks, Pam. So where are we off to next?
All right. Up next, we have Winter Worry by Babbler. And it goes like this. Chill prickles at the edges of the wind. Winter has finally come. And while I see all the lovely ribbons, I can't find a smile beneath the tree. Fall has barely ended, but we act like we're halfway there. Don't they see the road ahead? So many months till March. I haven't seen the sun in ages. Candles paint the shadows deeper. How long until I escape this indigo? How do I keep marching until then? Let the flakes pile on me while the other make merry. Feast on the carcasses of summer and wish on the broken bones. How long will winter last this time? How long until spring warms my toes? Plastic stars and dying evergreens, another dead fall to haunt my dreams. End poem.
Oh, that was a great read, Pam. I really like this stanza. Captured me. It says, fall has barely ended, but we act like we're halfway there. Okay, so in that, for some reason, it made me think like we're like I don't know if it's a correct interpretation, obviously, but like we're halfway through our fall, like our own defeat, our own fall, you know, like, because I thought it was figured like it was a play on words rather than just a seasonal thing, you know, like we're halfway to the fall, like we're halfway to our demise type of thing, but. She continues in saying, don't they see the road ahead so many months till March? So that's one of the other reasons I thought that. But I like her inclusion of the seasons and the let the flakes pile on me while the other make merry, feast on the carcasses of summer and wish on their broken bones. I thought that was that was hella dark and right down my alley. And it really kind of made this poem hit home with its deep darkness in it. I really enjoyed that. And I always like the word indigo in the poem. It's not one of those words that you come across often, but how long until I escape this indigo? How do I keep marching until then? So she mentioned March in the previous stanza as well. So there is a theme there. I really enjoyed this, and I'm glad that Babbler decided to write for the contest because I was actually quite surprised, but pleasantly so. So thank you, Babbler. What are your thoughts, Pam, having read it?
Yeah, I'm always impressed by Babbler's writing. She goes very deep with her emotional darkness, with the metaphors. I, too, like the use of the indigo because it's a representation of the blues, but it's a deeper and darker blues. I like how this is a look at the suffering from, you know, or dealing with depression. I thought it was clever how she used the March, the first time being the idea of the month of March, the question of, you know, how much longer do I have till spring starts to show. And then the idea of marching, trying to move forward when holding that weight of depression. I, too, was really impressed with that imagery and let the flakes pile on me while the others make merry, feast on the carcasses of summer and wish on broken bones. The idea of those turkeys that were fattened all summer that had become the sacrifice. And You know, I also like the plastic stars and dying evergreens, another dead fall to haunt my dreams. It is a constant reminder of consumerism and the death surrounding and despair surrounding the holidays oftentimes. So excellent write and very well done.
Indeed. And Felon, what were your thoughts?
I echo both of what you said and what, I mean, Babbler is an amazing poetess. I mean, she always brings something different, unique with every write. And what I really like is the same, I like the one that says, I haven't seen the sun in ages, candles paint the shadows deeper. How long until I escape the indigo? How do I keep them marching until then? The internal rhyme in this is just, it's insane. And I love that kind of, I like when it's subtle and it's not just in your face, but when you start, you know, reading it, you know, in your head, or even if you read it out loud, it just flows beautifully. And I think that's what this does, and how she ended it, you know, the plastic stars and dying evergreens, another death fall to haunt my dreams. Wow. I'm envious of that line. That's beautifully written and very dark at the same time. So great job there, Babbler.
Great comment there, Felon, and yours as well, Pam. I appreciate these writes and these wonderful comments. So where are we headed next, Miss Pam?
All right. Up next, we have Sally's Ditty by Weaver of Dreams. And Felon, will you please give that a read for us?
Absolutely. This is Weaver of Dreams. It's called Sally's Ditty. I feel something is coming. It's something not good, I fear. Although I'll be there for him, trouble's getting very near. It's hiding around the corner, unnoticed, like how much I care. He needs to know he matters. At this point, he's not aware. It's short-lived, over the second, and I'm sure the future doesn't beckon. Oh, no, no. Oh, no, no. And does the future beckon? It does not. I know he'll never see. He doesn't think of me. End point.
Yeah, I like I said before, I enjoy Sally's character in here because she's one of those beautiful souls that is also humble, and she's very creative, very resourceful, but she's very, very humble, and she feels as though she's not good enough for even Jack's attention. In this poem, it seems like she's talking about Jack and how, you know, she's always there for him, and then she feels as though she still isn't worthy of his attention, I guess. So I really appreciated this piece, even though it was short. It was a very succinct and kind of brought out her character even more. And I know that she's one of the people who's really appreciated, because there wasn't a whole lot of female presence in the movie itself, but she really stole the show in a lot of ways. So yeah, I appreciated this, Weaver. Thank you very much. Oh, and I guess it was a SoundCloud for it. Oh, I didn't notice.
There
that
was,
part.
But unfortunately, she got it in there after I had already, you know, I forgot to go back and double check.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, we'll probably play it one of these days just for funsies on one of my shows. So, yeah, thank you for that, Weaver. What are your thoughts, Pam?
This was clever. I like the title because of the fact that it's a brevity poem, and a ditty is a short song. So I thought calling it Sally's Ditty was just perfect. And I like how this is such a strong reflection of the character of Sally and how she loves and supports Jack. This really speaks with a lot of heart. It's hiding around the corner, unnoticed, how much I care. He needs to know he matters. At this point, he's not aware. And the sad part is there's in those lines, where it says, unnoticed, like how much I care. There's this idea that, you know, of him not noticing her, and in the end line too, I know he'll never see, he doesn't think of me. And it's such a sad take on unrequited love. So beautifully written and very well done.
Yeah, we've been in that position before to where it's like you do everything you can for this person and they just don't notice you sometimes. And I'm sure we've all had that in our lives. So they're very sad indeed.
Oh, definitely.
Especially for a soul like Sally's. So I know you don't know the characters too much, Felon, but what are your thoughts on the poem itself?
I mean, the poem in itself reads a lot, reads you know, very loud as far as what the intentions are, what she's trying to relay to the reader, and that is that, you know, sometimes you have expectations of someone or something or a situation, and you don't, if you don't express it, how are they going to know? So you can expect something from someone, but they're not mind readers. You have to, you know, express yourself, let it be known how you feel, and I think that she's not ever probably going to do that, but I think this is an excellent, excellent take on that, and I read the other little song that goes with it, and I think this is a great rendition of that, so excellent job there, Weaver.
Thank you, Felon. Yeah, that's a very good comment indeed. Yeah, so thanks for that, Weaver, and I will try to make it a thing to play your SoundCloud on my next show, no matter what the topic may be. Okay, so we're on to the next poem.
All right, up next we have Lover's Lament, collab with Maelstrom by Alice Macabre. And Robert, will you give that a read for us, please?
I'll try. The night bleeds porcelain as Sally sings a dark lullaby to her midnight garden of souls. Locks of flame in a heart of ash, she sews her love up yet once more. Whispers of memory carry her corpse amongst the dead. Heartbroken, she will join them soon. Jilted bride, twilight temptress, she is but a patchwork of wrath and ruin. Suddenly, a sound. Sally turns her ashen face, sensing him. Stumbling, broken, she lurches forward. A soft moan escapes frozen lips. Please, stay. Desperate now, shale and shingle crumbling neath her, drinking her despair. A haunted moon peers down. She has witnessed this performance before. A lantern raised high, a tormented beacon for affections long since claimed by a possessive, tempestuous mistress. Alas, 'tis naught but rumbling thunder, a yearning of soulmates, an echo of home across seas of sorrow, the tendrils beckon, solitary shores await. Moonlit waters sigh, a dirge of what if, Sally wanders alone. Her scarlet tresses write a love letter to the wind. Rage and anguish intermingle with the tides, and she weeps neath dying stars. Softly she sings her song, Sally's song, a lament of regret and loss. The horror of infinite loneliness looms like stars sucked from a velvet sky. But wait, there, a whisper on the breeze, his voice, a haunting call from beyond the grave, though indistinct, strong, commanding, reeling her in, she embraces welcoming arms of fiercest slate blue, together in death as in life, home at last, and poem. Wow, that was a hell of a collaboration there. This is like, seems like it's just, if it's from one mind, but it's also utterly beautiful and of course dark and encapsulates the character and the love affair very well. I like the sense of yearning and moroseness that is strewn about, like whispers of memory carry her corpse amongst the dead. Heartbroken, she will join them soon. Jilted bride, twilight temptress, she is but a patchwork of wrath and ruin. I really, really enjoyed that last line there. because like she's basically just the sum of all her parts, and but all that's left there is basically longing and wrath and emptiness and ruin. That's wow. This is phenomenal. I'm glad that they decided to do a collab for this, and I'm really glad and that they were inspired as they were to do this. So much appreciated, and very well done. What did you think, Felden?
I knew when you were reading it, Robert, I was like, he is going to love this piece. And he is going to love it. I said, what I really enjoyed about it was Drinking Her Despair, A Haunted Moon Peers Down. She's witnessed the performance before, A Lantern Raised Above. A tormented beckon from the affections long since claimed, be possessive, temptress, mistress. I mean, like you said, it just does appear as if one person wrote this, because it is just absolutely stunning. And it doesn't, because some people have certain styles that they write from, and you know exactly their verbiage, that's that person or that's something they would say. And this, you cannot tell either or. I could not tell you who did what, or even when the next person started, because it's just so beautifully written. It's like one cohesive thought, and it's just like, you know, it just illuminates off the page. I think this is just absolutely stunning work. And I don't know anything about the film, but I think that they just says a lot about it. They just absolutely amazing.
I agree. Like even not having seen or known, if you just like read the poem itself, like you're just like, whoa, that's some deep shit. So Pam, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I definitely have to agree with Felon. This is a seamless, just a wonderful collaboration. I really like how she put in the AN, obsessed with, what is that? Oh yeah, TNBC, that makes sense. The Nightmare Before Christmas is an understatement for us. So when I saw this contest, I just had to rope Maelstrom in. I think that is so cool. I love when somebody sees a contest that they know is just perfect for them and drags a writing partner in. That is awesome. You know, this is just a strong emotional impact, a great capture of the characters, and especially of the loneliness, the sadness, and the love that Sally feels. I really like Drinking Her Despair, A Haunted Moon Peers Down. She has witnessed this performance before, A Lantern Raised High, A Tormented Beacon for Affection. And like stars sucked from a velvet sky, but wait, there, a whisper on the breeze, his voice, a haunting call from beyond the grave. Just an amazing dark rite that looks at loneliness and love, and the idea of finally coming together at last. You know, so excellent write and very well done.
Indeed. There's that, it's kind of like the opposite of the unrequited love, to where you finally get what it is that you want and what you need, in the sense that, you know, you yearn and yearn and yearn, and then a lot of times, like how we said, it's not returned. But in this case, it is longed for from both ends. So, yeah, that was great. All right, where are we headed to next, Ms. Pam?
All right, up next we have Always in My Reach by Captain Kerr, and it goes like this. I see the winter's crystal glare. I hear the distant sleigh bells ring. Snowflakes cling. Something's in the air. I wish that he was here. The scented pine cones drop through the mist, through the hallowed eve of night. I hear him sing the nightingale of light. When will these feelings stop? His words so soothing to my soul. In yellow moon above the lamppost glow, I knew when I was just a girl, I'd love him more than any other boy, and never thought this day would come when he would leave me for another girl. The sleigh bells stopped, the winter shadow here, the pines asleep beneath the lamppost glare. He was always in my reach. The pines asleep, I never saw the need. He was always in my reach. End poem.
Yeah, this hits it from another angle, in a sense, to where how we were talking about Betty Page's poem, like, you know, you had something great and it was taken from you, or it was lost, or it came to an end. And that is, to me, really representative of winter months. You know, like, a lot of it has to do with loss. There's just so much loss that goes on, and doom and gloom and things like that, because, you know, you see the plants die, and then you see the frost, and then nothing grows, and there's just a whole lot of frigidity, you know, encompassing everything. And to have the person, like, the person you held in such high regard or high esteem, the warmth and you know, loving light leave you, basically makes your heart kind of like a snow globe of sorts, if I can have some poetic license there. But yeah, this, his words, so soothing to my soul, and yellow moon above the lamppost glow, I knew when I was just a girl I'd love him more than any other boy. So it's not just a momentary thing. It's not just like something that it was like, oh, you know, it was just a spur of the moment. It was a long thought out, you know, passion play. So it's always very sad when that happens, when you put so much into it, like so much heart, and this ends in loss. And it's not ever anything in your control, and that's the part about it that really makes you bitter over time. So I'm rambling, but yeah, that was very thought-provoking, as you can tell. It had me thinking and reflecting, so thank you for that, Captain Kerr. Pam, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, and tonight is not a bad night to ramble, because we don't have a huge amount to write, so, you know. Yeah, I like this. It has a beautiful lyrical quality. I like what you had to say about feeling like you're, you know, beneath somebody, and I might be slightly paraphrasing. And I thought the imagery of the yellow moon above the lamppost glow really reflected that. Like, I see this as the girl seeing herself as the lamppost and the guy as the moon, and, you know, her light not shining as bright as his. This also made me kind of think of the idea of love that's separated by death. The sleigh bells stop, the winter shadow here, the pines asleep beneath the lamppost glare. He was always in my reach. And the repetition of "he was always in my reach" makes me feel like there's a reason that he no longer is. And this idea that whether it's because they chose to walk away, or perhaps even the idea that death separated them. You know, just a beautiful and thoughtful write with a real melancholy feel to it. Wonderful and very well done.
That's a good point there, Pam. I was speaking of all this death and loss, and I didn't even cross my mind that it could have been from death too. Wow. Yeah, see, that's what happens. That's why you need more than one brain on this. Felon, what were your thoughts?
Oh, this is a very, very sad and poem of, you know, someone wanting to belong to someone, or wanting that person to be in their life. I like what she says: the sleigh bells stop, the winter shadow here, the pines asleep beneath the lamppost glare. He's always in my reach. You need to have someone always in your reach, but yeah, they're not there, or you can't grasp them. That's very sad, and I think this is very poetic and very, it's got a nice cadence, and really falls to the front very well.
Indeed, indeed. It was very wintry doom and gloom. Very apropos. All right, that was a great comment, you two. Where are we off to next, Miss Pam?
All right, up next, Felon, I put your poem. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay, refresh right quick. This is by Felon, and it's Ponder My Blessings, and it's off the just the theme, I guess, the theme song or whatever. It goes like this. Long way from the grave to Santa's sleigh. Oh, what a glorious exploring kind of day. There's more to death than these cobwebs. Home of the rolling green tombstones I've crept. How will winter find a guy Halloween skeleton? Knowing I'm a holiday out of his element, just a spirit of ghostly deeds and go by Jack. Santa full of Christmas cheer with a red velvet sack. Immortal won't stop and feeling of wanting more can say at least I don't have to be the first fairy tale of the stork in point.
Yeah, that's very interesting. That it says immortal won't stop a feeling of wanting more can't say at least I don't have the fairy tale of the stork. That's kind of a dig at old Santa, I think. But, yeah, for not knowing the story and for, you know, not following it much, I'm glad that you still were able to do something for it. You know, this is very clever and playful. And yet it had that really, it had that little slight touch of darkness there with there's more to death than these cobwebs, home of rolling green tombstones that crept, you know, how will winter find a guy, Halloween skeleton. So yeah, you did a good job for not knowing, especially. So I'm glad that you pieced something together so quickly. That was just bam on the moment. That's great. I'm glad you could be inspired. What about you, Pam? What do you think of Miss Felon's?
Oh, this is awesome. I really like how you combined the idea of Christmas and Halloween together, which is a great reflection on the prompt. I particularly did like the line, home of rolling green tombstones I crept, how will winter find a guy Halloween skeleton, knowing I'm a holiday out of his element. You really capture within those lines the idea of how Jack tries to be something that he isn't. I had to laugh at the can say at least I don't have the fairy tale of the stork. You know, like, thank goodness I'm not delivering babies. Actually, it makes me think of one of my closest friends. She had her first kid when she was 19 years old. We were both 19. And she sent me a birthday card that said, happy birthday. If nothing else, be thankful you're not pregnant. And that's how she told me she was.
That's cute. I love it.
Damn.
And, you know, I really like this all the way through. And for, like Robert was saying, for someone who's not watched the movie and just absorbed this from watching the video or listening to the music, it's really a great reflection on the character and who and what he tries to be. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Indeed. I'm glad you got to share that with us, Miss Felon. All right. So where are we off to next, Miss Pam?
All right. Let's see here. What was I going to grab next? Ah, yes. Here we go. All right. Up next, we have Stolen Crimson by Kay Gray. And Robert, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Okay. It says, acting like a Sally while I sip my Jack, stitches on my body to mend my cracks, doctored up my love to only want Jack, rear view of my only, never looking back, stolen crimson sack to only painted black, like a true aristocrat, a zero with Jack. And boom. Ah, wow. Another short and sweet one there. I really like that she involved, she put acting like a Sally while I sip my Jack. I have to say that was very clever, very clever. Doctored up my love to only want Jack, rear view of my only, never looking back. You know, stolen crimson sack to only paint it black. But she, yeah, she did a great job with the rhyme and keeping it like short. And obviously, you know, it's only 12 lines, and they're short lines, but they have a lot of attitude and sass in there. And I really dug that even having that, like having that little, you know, that strong attitude in it, like it still was true to kind of like, I picture Sally with like a cigarette or like, you know, a blunt or something, just, you know, riding on a motorcycle or whatever. it just really got me thinking in a whole different mindset, like on a, it set me off on a whole different journey, like where Sally is just like a badass, like just sitting there and drinking Jack and smoking cigs and stuff. That's really cool, actually. Like, now I think about it, like a more grown-up version, I suppose, they could work off of. Tim Burton, get on it. Get on it, man. I think that would be great. But, yeah, anyways, Stolen Crimson. I also like the title in, you know, Stolen Crimson Sack, like stole the Santa Claus's goods, because that was a theme in the movie as well, so. Yeah, thanks for that, Kay Gray. It really got me smiling and got my mind working, which is not easy to do nowadays. So yeah, what are your thoughts, Felon?
Oh, I like this. And like you said, you know, what it brought to mind to me is, you know how you see these people that are kind of mild and meek on the street or whatever, and then if you were to see them behind closed doors or at home, and they're just like dropping the F-bomb and this and that, like just going off, like really like showing their attitude, you're like, oh my God, I didn't know they could be like that. And you're like, oh, but yes, this is me. I don't have to be prim and proper. I don't have to be this or that. I can just, you know, let it rip. It's like that moment of letting out the Hyde to the Jekyll. So I like that. Great way of actually flipping the switch on Sally. So I enjoyed it a great bit, and I love the brevity and the short little lines. That's very impactful to me. Great job.
Yeah, I agree. Had a huge impact. What about you, Pam? What'd you think?
This had really clever lines and wordplay. I really did like acting like a Sally while I sip my Jack. The idea of acting like, you know, like the kind of like drinking yourself into a despair, into a sense of loneliness. All the way through this, a great end rhyme. It had a very bouncy feel to it. I also liked where she brings in Painted Black as like it's a nod to the Rolling Stones song, Stolen Crimson Sack to Only Painted Black. You know, the idea of making Christmas something truly dark. So excellent write and very well done.
Indeed, I did like that nod to Painted Black as well. Phenomenal, right? Where are we off to next, Miss Pam?
All right. Up next, we have your poem, Robert. So go ahead and give it a read for us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this one I wrote, 5 years ago. I forgot I even had it. It was about the Oogie Boogie from the movie. So it's called Oogie's Return. It says, little one, lay down to slumber. You should know I have your number. Peeking out from under your sheets as the ritual of the Oogie now completes. Fog rolls in from under the door. You hear footsteps along the floor. Noises in the closet and under your bed, hoping that it is all in your head. But of course, you couldn't go wrong in remembering the Oogie Boogie song. Your mind consumed by terror and despair as you feel my breath upon your hair. Pillows and sheets soaked in sweat, but you haven't known anything yet. You can feel as the panic grips, the screams cannot escape your lips. Your will is lost, your soul is mine. We will go where light cannot shine. The shadows, they have all risen. So you best pray while you can. Fear has now become your prison and the warden's the boogeyman. End poem.
Great read and write there, Robert. And Felon, your thoughts?
Wow. I like this a great deal. I like the cadence in it for one, but I also like the darkness, because it's that kind of darkness. It's like eerie, like it's something that could really happen. You know, you always check things and you find yourself waking up sweating or in the fear of this and that. I mean, I think this is a great dark write, as well as, you know, like the senses of our fears are basically, it's kind of the boogie, I think it is, that's coming for him. And I like how you ended it with the shadows. They've all risen. So you best pray while you can. Fear has now become your prison, and the warden, the boogeyman. Love it. Absolutely love it. Great job there, Robert.
Thank you, Felon. Much appreciated.
Great comment. Yeah, I like this one. I'm glad you realized and found that you had it, because it fits so well with the show. It's interesting because I feel like your Oogie Boogie is so much darker than the concept of the original one, but maybe that's because the original one sang a song, because he actually is a really dark character, but there's something about having a character sing an upbeat song that makes them seem less dark. And, you know, but I like how you have mostly the rhyming couplets in here, which flow beautifully, have wonderful imagery. I particularly like your mind consumed by terror and despair as you feel my breath upon your hair, pillows and sheets soaked in sweat, but you haven't known anything yet. I like how this speaks of that unknown terror that breathes on the back of your neck. And the idea of the unknown that's in the darkness. Just an excellent take on the chosen song, and very well done.
Thanks, Pam. Yeah, Oogie Boogie, like I said, he's my favorite. And he has that charisma and pizzazz in the movie, but when you hear him laugh at the end of his song, you know that there's a whole lot of darkness lurking in there. And I really enjoyed it, his character, and I appreciate your guys' comments. You humble me. So, for such an old write, too. I'm glad it was appropriate and still relevant, and that I could bring it about. So, thanks, everybody. Where are we headed to next, or do we still have more?
Right. Yeah, you know, it's funny because a lot of movies, and I wanted to say Disney movies, but I know this isn't a Disney movie, but it seems there's so many movies where the villains get the best songs. And that would be an example. All right, so up next we have She by Casey Day. And we have a recording for that one. So let me go ahead and push play.
She. Something in my soul needed to speak. So I mustered up the courage, but my knees were too weak. Tumbled down, I tried to dance to my own beat. Kept tripping over my two left feet. When the sun came up, I ran for cover because I knew I couldn't love her. So how could anyone ever love me?
Wow. That was quite profound in its brevity. I'm wondering which prompt she was inspired by. But I think that this is probably speaking from Jack's perspective, maybe. Because I believe there was a mention of two left feet in there, but I'm not sure. Either way, like the poem in itself is standalone, you know, and from beginning to end, the way that she spaced out her words in the AMs, I'm glad that she provided it, because this is one of those pieces that, you know, like I said, in its brevity, it's awesome. And the way that she spaced out the words and the way that she intonated and gave what's that word? Inflection, yeah, to where it was needed. It was very masterfully done. And a lot of us can relate to this. So it says, something in my soul needed to speak, so I mustered up the courage, but my knees were too weak. Like, how many times have we been in that situation to where we really saw something that we're something or someone that we're fascinated in, but we just couldn't bring ourselves to act? You know, we were held back by either fear or by self-depreciation, or thinking that we're not good enough, or, you know, insert reason here. But a lot of times our own doubt and fear keeps us from acting upon something that could be life-changing, or, you know, in one way or another. Like, it could be life-changing for better or worse. So that's where that we get the fear from, because, like, we don't want to go down that rabbit hole. We don't want it to end in tragedy, which it so often does. And when the sun came up, as I ran for cover, because I knew I couldn't love her, so how could anyone ever love me? You know, it's come that realization, that the inner reflection, that they feel that because they can't love as intended, that they're not worth love themselves. And I can definitely relate to that. And that's kind of choked me up a little bit in my mind. I was like, whoa, that's it's pretty epic. And because I can reflect so well, I like gravitate towards it. So I don't know. There's a whole lot here in just this short poem. So, wow. Thank you for that, Casey. I'm glad that you were inspired to write for the contest and shared your work with us. So what were your thoughts, Pam?
Yeah, this is definitely an amazing brevity. I do wish you'd put the prompt choice in her AN, but like you, I do think it is written from Jack's perspective and is probably either the song Sally's Song or Jack's Lament. You know, I like how this speaks on the idea of feeling unworthy of love. And I like how you had mentioned the thought of how oftentimes we fear risk of taking chances when it comes to making ourselves vulnerable to somebody. I really like Tumble Down, I Try to Dance to My Own Beat, Kept Tripping Over My Two Left Feet. And because I knew I couldn't love her, so how could anyone ever love me? Man, that really does have an emotional impact to it. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah. So where are we off to next, Miss Pam?
All right. Well, just so you know, we did have a limited amount in our contest. So what I did is I hunted up some writes that were kind of on topic. I found four writes from a different Nightmare Before Christmas contest. It was a picture prompt.
Ooh.
So it's still on topic, but not from our contest.
Okay.
And so this is Misfit by Fantail, and it goes like this. Like Alice, I'm escaping an unbearable world of stuffy structure on a quest to regain my muchness where madness seems to make more sense. End poem.
I don't know if I've ever come across the word muchness. And, like, it really gave me a pause. Like, I was like, oh, hey, have I ever even heard that? But in this context, it makes total sense. On a quest to regain my muchness, like to refill my vigor, or remember who I was at one time or another. So, and I also can appreciate, like Alice, I'm escaping an unbearable world of stuffy structure. Like conformity can be quite the confine, and everybody, like a lot of times you have to try to fit in. And if you don't fit in, you're, you know, like a pariah of sorts. And so, you know, escaping to your own, like to your own little realm for a while, where madness seems to make more sense, you know. I thought that that was a very, very cool ending. And the entire brevity itself, even though it's just 8 lines, it's like awesome. Like I always envy people who can do that. Like I'm not very good at brevity, so when I see people who can master it like this, it really gives me a sense of admiration. And I'm glad you found this piece, because we wouldn't have probably heard it otherwise. So yeah, thank you for that, Pam. And I'm glad that Fantail decided to write this. What were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I really like this one, and I like how she compares the characters. At least this is how I take it, and I enjoy and appreciate Fantail's writing, and she is wonderful at brevity. And I like how she compares the characters of Jack and Sally, who are trying, you know, aren't really necessarily being true to themselves, or trying, you know, to escape, you know, to Alice in Wonderland. And muchness is, according to the definition of muchness, the quality or state of being great in quantity, extent, or degree. So, so I thought that was an interesting thought. And I like the use of that word. It was a word I also had never heard of before. All the way through, this is just wonderful. I particularly do like an unbearable world of stuffy structure. The idea of wanting to escape other people's expectations of who and what you're supposed to be socially. So, excellent write and very well done.
Indeed, I agree. I'm all about breaking the confines of conformity. So, I was also quite the contrarian growing up. So, people say, don't do that. I'm like, maybe I will, you know, just because.
Yeah, nowadays they probably have that labeled as some sort of disorder, you know.
Maybe, yeah. It's called, it's the IDGAF disorder.
Yeah, it's called the FU disorder.
Yeah, there you go. The FUD. We'll call it the FUD.
Right. Yeah, I like that. All right. Up next, we have You Sail the Sun by S. Sharp. And go ahead, Robert, and give that a read for us, please.
Okay. Oh, the wave that lifts the full moon into my throat, swallowed by disappointment, tides roll, blood crashing in a steady beat. Storm surge upon the shore, horizon, day and night meeting, as I hoped we'd might, in a Christmas embrace, hand in hand, arm in arm, amongst the foam of the breakers, listening to the waves on this Christmas Eve night. But you jumped on the sun, sailed it away into the long and lonely night, leaving me to spend Christmas in the waves. And boom. Wow. I really like that, especially the ending. You jumped on the sun, sailed it away into the long and lonely night, leaving me to spend Christmas in the waves. Like, almost like a light that shone too brightly. And then, you know, it just left. And you're just there feeling ever colder in the absence. Man, these are... I'm glad that you found this one too, because it is quite to the prompt. It is very fitting for this show, like horizon, day and night meeting, as I hope we might in a Christmas embrace, you know, hand in hand, arm in arm. You know, this is it's kind of like, even if you didn't know what it was about, like you can basically, it's one of those things, like I said, it stands alone, you know. So even if you didn't know what it was about, like you would realize how that this poem is very deep. But knowing the characters that it entails and knowing the subject matter makes it that much deeper. And I can always appreciate when a poem can stand alone and when it's amplified or exemplified by subject matter. So yeah, this is another fantastic piece, and I'm glad that you dug this one up too. Well, what were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I really enjoy and appreciate this one, and you're right, it is one of those rites that it reflects really well on the characters, and yet at the same time stands alone. So you could be a huge fan of the movie and appreciate the rite, or you could know absolutely nothing about the movie and appreciate the rite. I really like the imagery of blood crashing in a steady beat, storm surge upon the shore, horizon day and night meeting as I hoped we might in a Christmas embrace. You know, there's a sense of romanticism in those lines of having that love that then at the end is separated. I also thought on the idea of Icarus and his father with the last stanza. Even though I'm sure that wasn't the intention, I couldn't help but think about the idea of how they had left the tower together and were supposed to, you know, fly off together, but Icarus went too close to the sun and crashed into the waves. And, you know, that whole idea of being not only separated by love in a romantic sense, but being separated from family during the holidays. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, that is a good take on it too, like the Icarus saga. Yeah, also being taken from family too is just degrees of separation, like whatever it is that keeps you warm or whatever it was your light, and it's being taken from you or drifts from you in some way, shape, or form is always a frigid tragedy of sorts. So yeah, that's thanks Pam for that. Where are we off to next?
All right, up next we have No Visions of Sugar Plums by Doc Junior's Third, and it goes like this. Yet every Christmas, countless children's stockings Santa fails to fill. Ho, ho, ho. On Christmas Eve, each child is snuggling safe within a bed, except the child at sea who each 5 seconds still lies dead. A dedication of respect for unnecessary pain, the effect of breeding babies, a revolving Helios couplet, Menatepin satire on irrational, unethical nationalism. December 2022, yet few this holiday season give the giving the gifts of vasectomies and tubal ligations. End poem.
Damn, well, that took a turn that I didn't expect. But yeah, I mean, that is true. Like, it's definitely a tragedy when every 5 seconds it says a child dies. But it's also part of, you know, it's just a part of life. It's one of those unfortunate things that we have to deal with. A revolving Helios couplet, Menippean satire on a rationally unethical natalism. So from this perspective, I'm wondering if they're coming from a pro-life or pro-death perspective. Because there's this one that says, few holiday seasons given the gift of the vasectomies and tubal ligations. So, you know, in a way, they're saying that too many people are being born, yet they also want to prevent a bunch of those births from happening. So this it seems as though it's a juxtaposition of sorts, if you want to look at it that way. I do, I can appreciate the part where it says a dedication and respect for unnecessary pain, the effect of breeding babies. Now, if you're doing it for that aspect, then yeah, I don't think that that's a good practice. Obviously, it's a very morbid thing to be a breeder of sorts, and for whatever reason it may be. So this is actually like he chose this one as well, and it's actually very, very dark, but it shines a light on a very dark truth in a way. On Christmas Eve, each child is snuggling safe within a bed. You know, obviously not every child. So this kind of puts a spotlight on the atrocities that happen and kind of enunciates the fainted whispers of the fallen children. So, yeah, I could appreciate this in a sense. So thanks for sharing that, Pam. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, this is an excellent write on the whole idea of the horrors of Christmas time or holidays where, there are children starving and while others are getting extra. And there's this imbalance in life. And it really does have a juxtaposition to it. I mean, even in the ho, ho, ho's, you know, with the first stanza, yet every Christmas countless children's stockings, Santa fails to fill, ho, ho, ho. And you know, so you got that jolly Santa laugh, but the words that come before it and after that are anything but jolly. And so that laughter is more of a mockery. I did like Revolving Helios couplet, Menapen satire on a rationally unethical natalism. Wonderful word choices. I like how he took this into the idea of a social issue what are we going to do for those that are suffering during the holidays? So excellent write and very well done.
Indeed, because there is a lot of suffering. Where are we off to next, Miss Pam?
All right. And just so you know, this show will probably end a little early because we just have 3 writes left. But it shouldn't be too early. Up next, we have Crest of Tears by Michael McDermott. And go ahead, Robert, and give that a read for us, please.
Crest of Tears. They come together to make their truth, each with a promise to live by an oath. One follower caught, exposed on a crest of cynical contrived love overflows that brings such unrest. For victims who can't maybe just move away when such betrayal lurks beneath false words willingly used to mislead an innocent belief of unintended abidance to intentions declared by fickle false words that will drown true love in tears of regret and poem. So this really seems to me about it almost reminds me of like in the, I think is it the Japanese or the Chinese? I can't remember which culture it is, but there's quite a few cultures that still do it even. They kind of marry the arranged marriages, you know, like have this thing to where you don't really have a choice. Like it's like you're going to marry him and you know, you're going to marry her or whatever. And a lot of the time there's like nothing but regret and cynicism and you know, like they come together to make their truth, each with a promise to live by an oath, you know. And then it also includes like one follower caught exposed on a crest of cynical contrived love overflows that brings such unrest. So you know, the even though that they're married, it seems as though they're dishonest with each other because they don't want to be with each other, you know. And that's why you mentioned when such betrayal lurks beneath false words willingly used to mislead an innocent belief. So they're also manipulating each other, like, and one of them is probably trying harder than the other one, but because, you know, an innocent belief of unintended abidance, you know. So I think that that's one of the subjects that's really taboo, because they a lot of people hold it in their belief structure and still, like, in their, I wouldn't say rituals, but traditions, that they still hold them to this day. For thousands of years they've done that. And whereas some people may see it as you know, foolish or wrong even, they still hold it to their hearts. But look at what we do. We celebrate Christmas, and the meaning of Christmas has lost its reason long ago, and it's not even anything built in any form of reality. Like, almost everything about it is false, and yet we still celebrate it. So, you know, like, I'm just going by historical facts, but the meaning behind it, a lot of people gather behind, and I can understand that. Like, I can understand that if a meaning promotes caring and sharing with each other and things like that, and being nice to people at least for one day out of the year, then hell, go for it if that's what you believe. But this, I'm sorry, I went off on a tangent. But yeah, this one, it made me think, and I like poems that make me think, because, like I said, it's hard to do nowadays. Like, it's like, I like getting my mind going, and this really kind of made me do that. So Michael McDermott, I thank you for writing this and sharing it with all poetry so that we can come across it and get our mashed potatoes stirring, so to speak. And I really like the subject matter. I appreciate its depth, and I like the fact that you actually touched on this topic, and that you made it work with the prompts. So that's very, very talented there. And as Pam would say, very well done. What do you think, Pam?
Absolutely. You know, this is beautiful, the way it's so thought-provoking and so deep in its reflection of not only a romantic relationship like marriage, but the idea of how we treat each other, you know, as fellow human beings. I like how this speaks on the type of love that's a lie. And strong lines all the way through, but I do like a love overflows that brings such unrest for victims who can't maybe just move away with such, when such betrayal lurks beneath false words. You know, it speaks in the whole idea of the masks that people wear, and how that, you know, you will see something as love that's not truly love. I also like, to intentions declared by fickle false words that will drown true love in its tears of regret. I like the imagery and the metaphor of drowning in those tears of regret, of looking back and realizing that what you had wasn't the love that you thought you had. So just a powerful and emotive write, and very well done.
Indeed, indeed. Very thought-provoking, to say the least. Where
Absolutely. All right, I'm going to put my poem up, which I did not have time to write something new, and I had nothing on the topic, but I figured I'd just grab something kind of dark, kind of humorous. And this was something I wrote a couple years or so back for when we used to have a rap show. And so this is Zombie Santa, and it goes like this. I'm drunk zombie Santa, chugging gin and Fanta, noshing on dim brains, the hoes will all know my reign. I'm looking fly and red, pumping out lyrics like lead, reading you like the night before Christmas was red. My words are a slaughterhouse, and the weak are all dropping dead. I'm leaping and creeping like a missile. I'm seeking a heated piece of flesh on this silent night. Keep on tugging and struggling because Santa likes a bitch who can fight. Oh, yeah, baby, them brains are so fine. I bet you look good bleeding next to some wine. It's a shame only once you're going to be slayed because zombie Santa sure wants to eat you like a Chinese buffet. End poem.
that's a lot of awesome right there. I never even saw this one. It's probably when I was on my hiatus, but man,
I think so.
Yeah, this is pretty damn awesome. Got Pam on the from the streets over here. Yeah, I can't stop smiling. Hold on. Okay.
All right. Yeah, you're just like, I didn't realize Pam was from the hood.
Yeah. Straight out of Cheesewood. But yeah, what you call it? This is, I like your wordplay with the hoes will know my ring. Because it was in the ho. That was very clever. And then the words that one part, I'm leaping in the creeping like a missile. I'm seeking a heated piece of flesh on this side. On this silent night, and that could, to me, that brought about more than one piece of meat. So yeah, that's very interesting. Keep on tugging and struggling because Santa likes a bitch you can fight. you gotta be chuckling. That's a good one. Today's been good because of this poem. But yeah, like I'm really glad that you decided to share this because, I don't get to see this part of you often. I know that you have the dark humor, and stuff like that, but this is one that is new to me and it's very apropos, for, you know, the ways that I present my show. Ho, ho, ho. So yeah, anyways, I enjoy your rap and I enjoy your cadence and your wording. Obviously, my words are like a slaughterhouse and the weak are all dropping dead. very clever indeed, Miss Pam. Very clever indeed.
Well, thank you. I thought you might get a kick out of that.
Oh, you were right. You were so right. Thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And up next, our last poem for the night. Unless you want to grab something else, is Remember Me by Pee Wee Cousin, which since I'm going to have you read this, you can still grab something else. We'll just have you do it after you read this. But,
All right.
Go ahead and give that a read, please.
Remember Me by Pee Wee Cousin. Let the rain come. Let it wash the fear and dirt from your face. Let our sins wash away once more and lead us from this place. I'll always remember you as you were before the disease. Time is the enemy, and again, it has reared its misshapen head. All I ask of you, dearest love, is just remember me when I am dead. End poem. That is one of those feelings that I'm sure anyone can relate to, is that you want to be able to leave a lasting remnant in the world. Like you want to be able to be present and be important in some way, shape, or form to somebody. And Christmas time, especially the holiday season, really kind of makes you reflect on that. And you know, it makes it so that you actually look at what's important and or what you want to leave behind, like what you want, what legacy do you want to leave, and let the rain come, let it wash away the fear and dirt from your face, let our sins wash away once more and lead us from this place. You know, I really like the opening stanza and the two opening stanzas, I should say. And even though it was very short, it was very impactful in the, I don't want to say tragedy, but it makes you feel a sense of tragedy and yet a sense of kind of like longing and hope that they will remember you when you're gone. Because there's so many times that I sit here in the holiday season and I reflect on things, because I've never really been fond of this season. But I do reflect on things that were nice and that did happen at one time or another. And, you know, it's like, well, not every season was bad, you know. And I can think of those who have gone and passed on before me and that are no longer here but are still with me in my mind. And this kind of resonates a lot with that feeling. And I can really appreciate it. So thanks, Pee-wee, for coming up with that. What are your thoughts, Pam?
Yeah, this is one I definitely appreciate. Well, first of all, I appreciate the fact because, like, right after the After Gray's show, I messaged Pee-wee and said, would you like to put an extra write on the board, you know, just in case it's needed? And he said, hold on, I'll write something up. And I was thinking he just put a pre-write. And nope, he wrote up something new. And this was beautifully written, a wonderful dark write in the look of love and death. I'll always remember you as you were before the disease. All I ask of you, dearest love, is just remember me when I am dead. I feel like this is two different voices. It's the voice of the person saying, you know, I remember who you were, and I don't know if the disease is cancer or some other disease, you know, and then, you know, it's one person is dying and the other person, and the person that's dying wants the other person to remember them. You know, when I am dead, remember me. I also wonder if maybe the disease isn't Alzheimer's and the memory is being stripped away. Just a really thoughtful line. I particularly like, time is the enemy, and again, it has reared a misshapen head. You know, excellent lines there, and definitely a very relatable right to anybody who has lost a loved one during the holidays. And very well done.
Indeed. I posted a piece to the room. It's not necessarily on topic, but it is about the cold. So I posted Bitter Storm to the room. And I will read, if you are ready, Miss Pam.
I am ready.
All right. Over the horizon, I have seen many a sunrise, and in turn, many dawns have lain to rest. And yet, these days, the light has been blotted out by the ever-growing blizzard that seems to linger as a baleful omen of what is to come. As time passes, the storm had grown enough to consume my little world. I've come to know nothing of tenderness or warmth. Kindled dreams could not muster a flicker. Seems incandescence is of the highest form of sacrilege here. After decades of being subjected to the ruthless cold, I have become akin to it. In my solitude, I noticed a child outside. He was desperately seeking shelter from the endless barrage of numbing frigidity. Yet, I could not help him. There was nothing I could do. I watched as he struggled in vain, trying to escape winter's unforgivable onslaught, but to no avail. If I still held pity, I would pity him. If I could still feel guilt, I surely would have. Yet, as he lay there, with the light of life leaving his body, I recognized the piercing similarity. This child is as I was, abandoned in the frigid abyss, with no help from the heartless voyeurs that looked on, draped in stoicism. My last bit of remorse beckoned that I not let him in, for within me is now far colder than any storm. End poem.
Beautiful. Oh, wow. Wonderful read and write. This is beautiful. And I like how you use the child, the image of the child outside and abandoned as a reflection of your own feeling of abandonment. I feel like this is one of those that has that is in part a made-up story, but in part has that bite of truth to it. I really like this all the way through, but especially in my solitude, I noticed a child outside who was desperately seeking shelter from the endless barrage of numbing frigidity, yet I could not help him. There was nothing I could do. I watched and struggled in vain, trying to escape winter's unforgiving onslaught, but to no avail. The feeling of helplessness there, the want to help and yet not being able to, it be like being caught in this nightmare cycle. Just a beautiful, haunting, dark write, and very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. Yeah, there was obviously a lot of metaphor, but there was a lot of truth in it. So I appreciate
I get
that.
That.
Yeah.
Oh.
Just
let you know, I did go ahead. Oh, sorry. I was going to say, I did go ahead and grab something if you wanted to kill a couple more minutes.
Oh, okay.
If
go for it.
Well, this is actually one of my few. I think it kind of fits with the theme of depressing Christmases. This is one of my few very straightforward personal writes. I actually wrote this the year my mother died, when she was in a coma in the hospital bed. It was her birthday, because she fell down the stairs and went into the coma on the 23rd of December. Her birthday is the 26th, and she died on we took her off of the machines. We took her off of the tubings and the machines, and she died on the 31st. So I wrote this for her birthday. And so this is Candles. There is a heartbeat of silence between every noise made, as if it's trying to hide on the edges of laughter and Christmas carols. I fretted over the guarantee that you would show up an hour too early with a nonchalant observation on the clutter in my living room. But the clutter stays in its place today as I wait for you to wake from the dreams you are walking across. I want to light candles, birthday candles, to celebrate you in the way you smile and laugh at my lopsided attempt to bake a cake and a birthday gift always wrapped in Christmas paper. Menorah candles, 6 days past, to celebrate the comfort you found in that simple gesture of tradition. Christmas candles, to celebrate the time of year, the awkward moments that eventually made us smile and pass out hugs because we needed to hold on to each other. One final candle, golden brown with blurs of green like your eyes, lights that shine on a backdrop of struggles. I'm wishing to see that glow, and I'm choosing to be hopeful because I know that's what you would be. Happy birthday. I love you. And that one obviously is really sad for me because of the fact that at that point, we were still hopeful that she might wake up from the coma. So,
yeah.
But anyways, sorry.
That's, I never got to hear that one either. So I definitely can appreciate that. And, it also resonates with me because I had a similar experience, not necessarily to that degree, but my grandfather, for example, his birthday is New Year's Eve, and mine is on Christmas. So, you know, there's always been, like, as the time passes every year, it just reminds me of him. And this ode to your mother. I'm sure that if she was able to hear it, I think she would smile. And she would probably, you know how she would react best because, you know, that's your mother. But I'm sure she would find some enjoyment in it and in knowing that you had the hope for her and you had that candle for her. And this is basically one of those things to where people take these things for granted. You know, they figure that, like how you said in this part where it says Christmas candles to celebrate this time of year, the awkward moments that eventually made us smile and pass out hugs because we needed each other. We needed to hold on to each other. And then the other part that says, where is it at? Oh, I fretted over the guarantee that you would show up an hour too early with a nonchalant observation on the clutter in my room. So, you know, there's that hoping and if you didn't know, like it would be like a taking for granted, like, oh yeah, to assume that it's going to happen, but this is more of a hope that it would. And it never does. And so I can appreciate the depth and the humanity in the piece. And I'm glad you decided to share it with us because, like I said, these are the type of pieces too that I also like to shine light on and show everybody that everybody's going through something and it's not always cheery, but there is a lot of deep, deep sentiments. So thank you for sharing that with us, Pam. Is there anything else you want to say about it?
Absolutely. Well, you know, now tonight, within 15 minutes, you got to see two different sides of the experience that is Pam Ray. So, but no, thank you for taking time to listen and to comment. It is a difficult write for me to read. So I appreciate knowing that you are appreciative and sensitive to these kind of writes. So thank you.
Yeah, we're all walking Rubik's cubes, so. I can understand that. Yeah, and I appreciate you sharing, like I said. So with that being said, we have 2 minutes. I don't know how we managed, but we did to get to the end of the show. I appreciate, of course, my lovely co-host, Pam Ray, as always. I appreciate Felon as well for calling in and spending time with us and reading some poetry and reading some of her own. I appreciate everybody that wrote for the contest and they were willing to be on the board and to share their poetry with us. And I still have, I'm still kind of caught up as to what my next topic is going to be, but I will figure it out and stir those potatoes. But I thought these were some excellent and brilliant writes, and I thought that everybody was very good with the prompt. And I'm glad that you all were inspired and that you felt that you can come and share your poetry with us. So remember, everyone, that you are always welcome in the solace of shadows. Have a good night, everybody.